mainline Protestants love to hate on the book of Deuteronomy. Much of what we read in Deuteronomy seems either silly, like laws about wearing tassels on the four corners of your garment or how to build a roof, or harshly extreme, like the long list of offenses that can garner capital punishment, including but not limited to adultery or disobeying your parents. And what doesn't seem silly or extreme seems to be too simplistically linear for us. Do this good thing for God, and then God will do this good thing for you. We think we know better. But I don't think we give Deuteronomy enough theological credit. I think we tend to read Deuteronomy from the perspective of a people steeped in the individually oriented Protestant work ethic. And so we read the book as if it only applied to individuals. And from an individual standpoint, we know that tit-for-tat bargaining with God doesn't work. Do this and you will surely be blessed is a truly naive interpretation of the faith from an individual's perspective. But to read Deuteronomy as written just for you personally is to misunderstand the book. The law in Deuteronomy is collectively given to the whole people of God. The law is given so that a whole people can live in harmony with one another. And on the macro scale, the promises of God in Deuteronomy ring true. A world with less sin is by definition a world with less suffering. And less sin is that which Deuteronomy concerns itself. There is a setup introduction at the beginning with an overview of the law, and the end is a leadership handoff from Moses to Joshua. But the lion's share of the book is loosely structured on explicating the Ten Commandments. You see, what's happening in Deuteronomy is that the law is being reinterpreted. The hint is in the name of the book. Deutero, nomos, is Greek for second law. Deuteronomy takes the law given to God's people on Mount Sinai and just digs in, going deeper and elaborating on what these commandments might look like if they were lived out. Our reading this evening is from the last part of the last commandment. Neither shall you desire your neighbor's house or field or male or female slave or ox or donkey or anything that belongs to your neighbor. In other words, thou shalt not covet. The law teaches that coveting, desiring that which is not yours, is a sin. Why? Because coveting destroys relationships. Just as idolatry is putting things above God, so too coveting is putting things above people. And that misplaced primacy of the thing above the relationship eventually wears down and destroys the relationship. Coveting also takes up energy that could be better placed basically anywhere other than sitting around feeling sick to your stomach because you want something so bad you just can't stand it. This is the absolute opposite of Christian non-attachment that Barclay's been talking about for months now. But the most insidious aspect of covetousness is that coveting feeds the consumption machine. When we consume that which we covet, be that a house or a car or even someone who does not belong to you, we feed the consumption machine. We get what we want, but we're not sated for long. Instead, our attention roves to another object. We want, we want, we want. And the more we want, the less we care about the destruction that consumption leaves in our wake. We've become people defined not by who we are, but what we want and by what we have. Deuteronomy commands a different way, a way of freedom from being ruled by our desires, a freedom to be in right relationship with others around us, a freedom that sets into motion a virtuous cycle. The response to the sin of covetousness in Deuteronomy is a ritual of thanksgiving. And there are three parts. First, the law instructs the people who live in the land that God has given them to bring the first fruit of God's land back to God. This acknowledges that all that the people have been given comes from God. The second instruction is to go to the priest and recount the salvation history of their people. "A wandering Aramean was my ancestor," it begins, and continues to tell how God's mighty acts saved God's people, but also formed a ragtag group of slaves into God's chosen people. The individual making the offering sees themselves as part of God's story, as part of God's people. This retelling is a reincorporating the self into the community. And then the people who have given to God what is God's, who have literally remembered themselves into the community, sit and share a meal. They celebrate this meal not only with the Levites, who are not of their tribe, but also the aliens among them, who are not even of their people. Together, the community comes together to feast, and they eat until the hungry among them are filled. Giving back to God, remembering who we are, and sharing what we have sets us free from being mired in the cesspool of want. And being set free from sin is what the law is all about. Because when we turn from sin and choose life, we choose life not only for ourselves, but for those around us. A world with less sin is a world with less suffering. Tomorrow marks the beginning of the secular holiday season. Designed by individualistically based capitalism to scientifically induce coveting. Don't fall for it. Give back to God. Remember who you are and share what you have with those around you. Choose life.